We did it again. Verizon was just named America's most reliable network by RootMetrics for the 16th time in a row, proving once again that nobody builds networks like Verizon builds networks. That's why we're building 5G right. That's why there's only one best network, Verizon. Best and most reliable based on RootMetrics reports from second half 2013 to first half 2021 of three operators on all network types combined, not specific to 5G networks.
We'll start in 3, 2, 1. Hello and welcome everybody to a live edition of All Steelers Talk. I'm your host, Noah Strackbine, joined always by the lovely Donnie Droon. Donnie, OTAs are here. Bitcoin is circulating in Pittsburgh Steelers news. It's a wild week for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Let's start off with your thoughts heading into OTAs and what you feel the Steelers need to accomplish here in the first couple of days.
Yeah, I just feel like the first couple of days, you know, just need to be a somewhat of an adjustment period. You know, you haven't played football collectively for, you know, months on end, you know, especially with the early playoff exit like the Steelers did endure. So right now, this time of year is kind of, you know, getting back in the groove of things, you know, getting adjusted, getting the basics, you know, all narrowed down. So by the time you head into training camp, you know, you already don't need to go over the nitty-gritty again. You know, you can finally get into the different schemes that Matt Canada wants to implement, the different kind of like defensive tweaks that, you know, a guy like Keith Butler would have brung heading into the 2021 season. But I think a big word you're going to hear, you know, associated with OTAs is going to kind of be just the refreshers. And then just new guys, you know, trying to get acclimated to the speed of the NFL and the playbooks that ensue with it.
Yeah, no doubt. Honestly, I think I've been at OTAs the last 2 days. And the biggest thing I've taken away is, why does Matt Canada's hat not have a Twitter account? The dude has worn the same straw hat for 2 years now. Nobody's brought it up. I was standing there today and I was thinking, dude, he's wearing the same sweatsuit for one that he has worn every single practice and every single photo, and the same exact hat. And that's cool for a player. That's cool for a coach. I mean, Mike Tomlin, how many long sleeve Pittsburgh Steelers t-shirts does he own?
That's 400.
400. The guy wears the exact same long sleeve Steelers t-shirt or shirt every single day for the last 10 years of his career. Nobody's questioned it one time. And I'm not going to, you know, I'm never going to be like, what are you doing?
Yeah, but what's the wash and dryer look like?
Exactly. How many times? I mean, I get his wife is like a fashion designer, but like she's got to let him know, like, hey, dude, you're coming off as a little gross, just a little gross. I don't know. It's 85 degrees. I'm sweating in a t-shirt up in the balcony. Mike Tomlin's down there in a sweatsuit every single day. Like it's nothing. It's crazy. But anyways, Matt Canada's hat's one. The second thing, I think Najee Harris, Ben Roethlisberger, Kevin Dotson, some of the guys that we expect to take on a pretty big role or, you know, in Ben's case, continue to have a big role this season. Those are guys that everyone's going to have an eye on. And I think it's an opportunity to see how well they're actually going to play this year. Najee Harris looks pretty good. You know, he's been there 2 days and he's led the running back groups. He's taken RB1 snaps pretty much every single time. And he's looked smooth. He's looked fast. He's looked powerful. Kevin Dotson looks like freak. Kevin Dotson looks like he has taken 3 steps forward this offseason. And we talked to him a little bit today and he said that, you know, he worked all at left guard throughout the offseason, which is huge because that's, you know, that's his role now. And then, you know, guys like Alex Highsmith, smaller guys like maybe some of the rookies like Trey Norwood and Quincy Roche, those guys. It's just an opportunity to see everything that we're going to see for the rest of the summer. But a first glance is always a great glance, as we saw in rookie minicamp. Another thing, the Steelers have had 3/4 of their team show up, of their 90-man roster show up. Some big names have not. I'm not allowed to report who has not, but I'll say this. The Steelers, some of the Steelers' undrafted rookies that catch the football have a big opportunity in this first week of OTAs to stand out. I don't know if you take that as a good thing for them or a bad thing for Ben Roethlisberger.
I mean, I feel like Ben's been playing so long, and you know, especially the last couple of years that he's gotten to play with this receivers trio. I think the Steelers have done a good job of kind of continually like adding talent to the depth chart while also kind of keeping the same core like intact. You know, he's nothing new with Claypool, nothing new with Juju or Deontay Johnson or James Washington. Even Ray McLeod, he got to, you know, spend a little bit of time with last year. So I'm not necessarily concerned at all, you know, with Ben kind of quote unquote getting those reps with his receivers. Obviously the more reps, the better with those guys, sure. I think to your first point, I think it's probably a really good opportunity for those undrafted, you know, rookie free agent guys to at least get a little bit of reps, because who knows, you know, maybe they impress a little bit and, you know, just mini camp, and maybe they kind of build on that in training camp, and all of a sudden they have a spot in the 53-man roster.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think that there's a lot of guys out there that have that opportunity. Lamont Wade's a guy that has stood out. He's taken a lot of reps, whether it's at safety or at corner or at kick and punt return, which is great. Also, guys like Cody White at wide receiver has stood out. Dax Raymond has taken a bunch of reps everywhere because the Steelers just don't have, you know, everybody showing up quite yet, which will come. I mean, it's OTAs. Ben is here the first week, and then he goes to Bermuda for 3 weeks, and we never see him again. So that's just how it works. At the same time, there are guys that have stood out or have not stood out and maybe seem to have fallen back into a role. I would say the biggest name there is Benny Snell Jr. Right now, Benny Snell just looks slow. Like, he just looks like a guy who doesn't have the same build and the same athleticism as the rest of the guys. And I think maybe last year you watched this group and you looked at the running backs, and when James Conner is the lead guy, and that's where everybody's looking to be. And Benny Snell might have been like here compared to it. But now Najee's up here and Benny Snell's here, and it's just a gap. And you could see for the first time in a couple of years how significant it was between top-tier talent in the NFL and what the Steelers have been looking at, which is good and bad at the same time.
Yeah, definitely. First of all, shout out to Derek in the chat. Greetings from Mexico. Hola, ¿cómo estás? Hey. Thanks for popping in. Appreciate you. But no, just kind of going back to Benny Snell kind of looking slow. And I know we're picking on, you know, minuscule stuff here. But when you're running footwork drills with guys like Najee Harris, Jalen Samuels, Anthony McFarland, you're going to look pretty slow. That's kind of how it is. We never expected Benny Snell to have those kind of light feet. We know what Benny Snell's here for. He's here to get those nasty 1 or 2 yards in the cloud of dust of the Steelers really need it. I think the Steelers know that, and I think Benny Snell knows that. Now, granted, will that kind of limit his role and cut into his playing time? Absolutely. I mean, the Steelers wouldn't have drafted Najee Harris at the 24th overall pick if they didn't plan on implementing him. You know, in all sorts of various roles. But yeah, talk about probably a guy who's got to be pretty disappointed with how the entire offseason panned out. And I know we talked about James Conner leaving free agency and how either Benny Snell or Anthony McFarland would have had to step up to the plate. And here comes Najee Harris all of a sudden. So I think he's probably going to have a chip on his shoulder heading to training camp. And that's only going to be a good thing for the Steelers.
It is going to be a good thing for the Steelers. But at the same time, I don't think Benny Snell Jr. fits into this offense. I mean, all we've heard all offseason is Matt Canada is going to make this team fast. Najee Harris said that this team is going to work quickly so that players can play fast. And Benny Snell Jr. is not fast. By no means does Benny Snell Jr. fit the mold of a dynamic offense. He's a ground and pound guy. That's awesome. But that's not who the Steelers are trying to become. So, I mean, it's tough. You know, he's a nasty guy, and he fits that third and goal or that goal line situation or that third and short situation. But, you know, it's tough to say that he has a big role. Can we explain the limitations that can't? Yeah, I would love to throw that out there, Steven. That would be fantastic. You can't report anything, if we're going to be honest. I can't let you know how many guys have been there, if anybody's changed their number, wink, wink. And, whether or not players are playing certain positions or the other. What I could tell you is that most people that are there look good. Ben looks good, and that's what I want to talk about next. Ben looks real good. He looks sharp. He's throwing 50-yard dimes. That video that I put up with him and Najee Harris exploded, and for good reason. And for anybody who said that Ben Roethlisberger threw a bad pass, I mean, it was not a bad pass. By no means was it a bad pass. All the last 2 days, all he's done is throw dimes 30 yards down the field, and that's exciting.
Hey, what'd you make of the video that kind of sort of went viral on Steelers Twitter of Mason Rudolph overthrowing a open receiver by 5 yards with nobody around him?
All I'll say is, I'll say a lot, actually. Dwayne Haskins looks skinny. He looks accurate. He looks like he's throwing a little high. I'll say that. Dwayne Haskins does look like he's throwing a little high. Mason Rudolph, I mean, he looks like Mason Rudolph. Josh Dobbs looks pretty good. Josh, I was talking to shout out Nick Farbaugh over at Steelers Now. I was talking to him today, and he's somebody who's an advocate for a mobile quarterback in the Pittsburgh Steelers locker room, because I'm a guy who thinks Josh Dobbs is at the bottom of the totem pole right now. But Josh Dobbs looks pretty good, and Mason Rudolph, I mean, what do you think of Mason Rudolph overthrowing an open receiver?
I think it's a mini camp in OTAs, and I'm not going to put very much stock into it. I'm sure we can find video clips for almost all of these guys, you know, making these, you know, little minor mistakes. Granted, is he coming for a big bench job this year? No, probably not. I mean, but, you know, Rudolph didn't get an extension in the offseason, so that at least tells you that the Steelers at least want him around for a year or two more. I just think Rudolph already kind of has that second spot slated. I don't see Haskins performing phenomenally in you know, mini or training camp or even the preseason. I don't see Josh Dobbs kind of doing the same thing. And we've kind of held that sentiment throughout the entire offseason that the quarterback battle is going to be for that final third quarterback spot in the active roster. And it obviously it's going to come down to, you know, a guy like Haskins or Dobbs, you know, granted if Rudolph does stay in that number two spot.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like a big competition of who's going to be the number two guy. I think it's more open than you think. I think that Dwayne Haskins and Josh Dobbs both have an opportunity to make this work and to turn this into their backup job. But that's more on Mason Rudolph losing the job than it is them winning the job. But overthrowing guys, I mean, it doesn't look good. Like you said, though, it's OTAs. It is what it is. For those that we have talked to, for the players that we have talked to in 2 days, the biggest thing that stood out is Cam Hayward defending Ben Roethlisberger, which we'll continue to talk about here. But for those who have not seen it, this is what Cam had to say yesterday.
We lost the game last year. I think we're just blowing it out. Dude went 11-0 to start the season. How many other quarterbacks did that? And, you know, I think we can sit up here and talk about, you know, we lost the game last year. You know, we lost to the Cleveland Browns. Okay, so be it. We fell off at the end. We still made the playoffs. But I'm not here to, you know, say my quarterback's not able to do it. I've seen this guy win Super Bowls on TV. I've seen him day in and day out compete. And, you know, you just get frustrated because, you know, I know Ben puts in work. And I know how much he cares about this team. If he didn't want to do it and he didn't, you know, If he was just here for the money, that's one thing. And I don't think we would ever have to worry about that. But when he steps in this building, he's 100% dedicated to this. So when I hear the bad mouthing about him being, you know, a not great quarterbacks, and then everybody's ready to elevate other quarterbacks, I'm like, what have they done? You know, this guy is a proven winner, but yet we're ready to discount him. All I was saying was, you know, I think having a greater balance is going to make him that more dangerous. You know, you bring in guys, and I know our offensive line is in flux, but, you know, they're going to be better because they're learning a different system. We bring in another running back. We bring in, you know, our receivers are a year older. Bring in another tight end. All these different things I think can help Ben. And, you know, I'm excited for him. You know, as a defense, when the offense can stay on the field, that lets us know that we're okay. When the offense isn't on the field and we're on the field, that means we gotta kick butt. But when the offense is on the field, we can totally get after it.
Strong words, obviously, from the boy Cam Hayward, who for the second time has now defended Ben Roethlisberger in the last week. And his words are true. At this point, I'm sick and tired. I saw PFF tweeted it out today, and I'm by no means a guy who's going to sit here and be like, the Pittsburgh Steelers are winning a Super Bowl. I've been saying that all offseason. But PFF tweeted out today, Ben working on his deep ball, throwing little passes to Najee Harris as a joke. And it's just been Ben slander all offseason for zero reason.
Yeah, and, you know, kind of going back to Cam Hayward, I would hate to make that man angry. Oh, my God. That's terrifying to listen to talk like that. So best of luck to everybody in the AFC North going up against him this year. But to kind of switching back to Ben, it feels like, at least my memory serves me correctly, not a whole lot of guys have been coming out and defending Ben Roethlisberger this year, at least in a public setting like that. I know Juju's been a very big advocate for Ben, you know, ever since he signed that 1 year deal to come back to Pittsburgh. Obviously, Cam Hayward just now. But it feels like a lot of the silence for the haters is going to have to come from Ben in his play. Mm-hmm. You know, we've talked multiple times through the offseason about how You know, is this a Super Bowl team? And if it's not, why did Big Ben come back to begin with? And, you know, I think in order for this team to get to a Super Bowl caliber team, Big Ben's got to play like he did through the first 11 weeks of the regular season.
Yeah, he definitely does. But I don't understand, like, okay, so we all acknowledge that Randy Feuchner was a major problem for the Pittsburgh Steelers last year. We all acknowledge that the play calling was what killed all momentum for the Pittsburgh Steelers last year, on top of a bunch of other things, drops, the lack of a run game. But, you know, for the most part, play calling played a major role, right? So the first 11 games, Ben's drawn plays in the dirt, making every headline possible about coming up with plays on the fly. And everybody's freaking out, praising Ben Roethlisberger. Ben backs up a little bit. Let's Randy take over more because everybody's talking about how Randy's not qualified and he's not making plays on – he's not calling plays on his own. It's Ben's team. So Ben lets Randy do his thing, and boom, the Steelers lose four out of the last five. So if we're going to look at Ben Roethlisberger, I'm looking at Ben Roethlisberger the first 11 weeks of the season, not the last five, because that was Ben's team. This was not.
Yeah, and one thing we didn't even mention with that is the below-average offensive line that he had to play behind. And granted, you know, this offensive line this year has potential to be better than an offensive line, but we still don't know. You know, there's a lot of question marks coming into the offensive line heading to 2021, but just kind of focusing back on Ben, you know, and I think his arm, you know, we'll see how it holds up over the course of a 17-game regular season schedule. But I think if the people around him do their jobs like they're supposed to, I think he'll be fine. I honestly think he'll be fine. I think Matt Canada's offense, you know, hopefully benefits him a little bit more than Randy Feuchner's offense. You know, I don't think the Steelers will lead the league in drops again, you know, with their receiving core, you know, and hopefully he can get some protection. But a lot of the offense last year was predicated on keeping Ben upright and healthy, and that involved a lot of 2-3-step, you know, drops, a lot of quick read routes. They didn't really throw the ball down the field a whole lot. So he didn't really get a chance to show whether or not he still, quote unquote, had that deep arm. And I know PFF likes to joke a lot, but we saw Ben time in and time out last year throw and make plays down the field. I mean, Chase Claypool, the 5-touchdown game he had against Philadelphia, mm-hmm. put it right on the money for him, you know, through another deep touchdown pass against the Seahawks. I mean, it's almost laughable, and this is coming from a guy who's been kind of wary on, you know, letting Ben Roethlisberger be, you know, still the best quarterback in the AFC North heading to 2021. But at the end of the day, man, like, he's still a Hall of Fame caliber quarterback. Like Cam Hayward said, he's a proven winner, and until proven otherwise, that I think we have to give him the benefit of the doubt.
So, for one, Ben led the league last season in passes completed over 20 yards, which people just seem to overlook. And yeah, a lot of it had to do with him staying upright, but it was an overcautious play calling by Feuchner because he was nervous about what a 38-year-old quarterback does if he gets hit. Well, guess what? If this is Ben's last ride, and this is it, this is ride or die, we're winning the Super Bowl, or I'm going home, well, take a couple of hits. Who cares? Ben lived his whole career. I mean, we've talked about it time and time again that Ben Roethlisberger is a guy that when we were 16, 17 years old watching this guy, we were thinking – he's playing until he's 30, 35 max because he's getting smoked all the time. And now all of a sudden Ben can't take a hit. I don't understand where that came from because the dude's never been hurt ever. His only major injury was a non-contact injury. He's shown no signs of deteriorating over time. There were the reported knee issues last year, but you could believe that or you don't believe that. I didn't hear anything. So I don't know. I'm very – I want to say I'm defensive towards Ben because the dude has just shown time and time again that he does what everybody says he can't do. And yeah, the Steelers' success relies on him, but they went 11-0 when they leaned on Ben Roethlisberger in 2020. And I have no issues with them doing it again in 2021, but it could get harder. And that moves us into the Julio Jones, whatever you want to call it, the Julio Jones showdown between him and Atlanta and whoever could be the biggest bidder and get the star wide receiver this season. And right now, you told me before the show that the list is the New England Patriots and the Tennessee Titans, but I have a funny feeling that the AFC North is not ruled out, and the Baltimore Ravens would clearly lead that list. You said their odds were plus 300 as of right now. That's honestly not terrible for a guy like Julio Jones for to meet up with Lamar Jackson.
We did it again. Verizon was just named America's most reliable network by Root Metrics for the 16th time in a row, proving once again that nobody builds networks like Verizon builds networks. That's why we're building 5G right. That's why there's only one best network, Verizon. Best and most reliable based on Root Metrics reports from second half 2013 to first half 2021 of three operators on all network types combined, not specific to 5G networks.
Check out the latest footwear innovation from Adidas, the Adizero Adios Pro 2, which features carbon fiber energy rods that are both lightweight and precisely tuned for a more anatomical transition. Everything from the ultra-light polyester upper to the re-sculpted midsole and the reinvented outsoles are designed for speed. Visit adidas.com to learn more today.
No, not terrible at all. I mean, they're the third listed favorites on Bet Online behind teams like the Patriots and Titans. And there's been a couple reports that have came out and said Julio has narrowed down his teams to both the Titans and the Patriots. But, you know, I don't think Julio is able to get inside those meetings and able to pull the trigger on the trade. I don't think the Falcons are going to trade him for less than what they feel they think is valuable enough to get him. You know, and that being said, I absolutely still do think that a team of the AFC North, whether that be the Ravens and kind of the Browns, but not necessarily, but, you know, more so Baltimore, a team that absolutely needs that bona fide number one receiver. I know they just drafted Rashad Bateman. I know that they have Marquise Brown. None of those guys, at least as we're talking right now, have that proven number one receiver capability, like a guy like Julio Jones, who despite being 32 and has that, what, $13, $15 million cap hit attached to him next year. He's, you know, kind of followed by injuries the last few years. He's still one of the most dominant receivers to ever touch a field in the NFL. And, you know, the Ravens are that team that are just looking for a few more puzzle pieces to go and make that Super Bowl run. And I think Julio Jones can be a big part of that.
Julio Jones fixes pretty much everything. Let's be honest. If you have Lamar Jackson, who has not been able to find a wide receiver for the life of him over the last 2 years, and you add Julio Jones to the mix, you've immediately become 10 times better. Immediately. Lamar Jackson's looking Julio Jones' way every single down. It frees up Mark Andrews. It makes Marquise Brown able to be what Marquise Brown's supposed to be, and that is a number two guy with a ton of speed, kind of like a Tyreek Hill. And say what you want about Tyreek Hill, but Tyreek Hill is a number one that played. He has a number two role as a number one receiver. And Rashad Bateman, I don't know if they're going to use him in the slot. I don't know if they're going to use him out wide. But either way, he's a rookie. And nobody's looking at a rookie as the guy that's here to fix an entire passing game. Sometimes, yeah, but not a rookie that you're getting at the end of a first round. So, I mean, Julio Jones fixes pretty much everything. As of right now, though, I don't think somebody said this to me today, that the Ravens, maybe they fixed their passing game. The Ravens did nothing to fix their passing game. They drafted a slot wide receiver. They're still banking on Marquise Brown to finally have a breakout season, which isn't going to happen. And their big addition to the offensive line as an upgrade is Al Villanueva. So I would say they're 0-3. And if they get Julio Jones, yeah, that's great. But I don't know. When it goes back to if he's going to be traded, I think that he has to be. I'm pretty sure that his cap hit comes June 6th or something, and the Falcons cannot afford him.
Yeah, and I think that might have been a big reason why they drafted Kyle Pitts at number 4 overall. But just kind of looking at how Julio fits into the compass of the Baltimore Ravens, you have to look at it two different ways. One, does Julio want to go to a team that doesn't really pass the ball? And I know Julio said he's there to win football games, and Ravens have done a very good job of that the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. You know, a guy like Julio, who's used to being the alpha male in the locker room, no matter where he's been, who's used to getting the ball at least thrown to him 10 to 15 times a game. You know, unless the Ravens kind of really change the way they're doing stuff and, you know, only go to a Julio Jones only passing, you know, aerial attack, that's not going to happen. You know, the Ravens aren't going to bend and break their offense just for one wide receiver to come in. If he's okay with kind of, I don't even want to say reducing his role, if he's okay with changing entirely the offense that he plays in exchange for winning football games, sure. You know, I think Baltimore is a great fit. But kind of looking at things from a Baltimore, you know, perspective, they're a team that runs the ball 30 times. You know, they led the NFL in rushing attempts. each of the last two seasons.
And finished last in passing yards.
Yep, and they've had a lot of success doing that. And, you know, kind of the thing with that is if you get Julio Jones, you're going to be more inclined to pass. And that's kind of what teams want you to do when you have a guy like Lamar Jackson who hasn't exactly refined his pocket passing skills yet. I'm not trying to knock him, but, you know, it's no secret. Whenever the Ravens get down in big games or playoff games and you force Lamar Jackson to sit in the pocket, you know, and play as a passing quarterback, things haven't worked out well. You know, it's not some great big secret. The Titans did it 2 years ago and who beat them? The Bills did it in their playoff game last year. You know, the Steelers did it twice. You know, the Steelers swept the Ravens in 2020 and everybody kind of seems to forget that.
Yeah,
but, you know, I think you can't go wrong with adding Julio Jones to your team. I think if the Ravens got Julio, he'd be a great addition to the wide receiving room. But I'm just not sure it's going to kind of I don't think it ties everything together for Julio or Baltimore.
No, it doesn't work. You were spot on. The way to make the Baltimore Ravens worse is to make Lamar Jackson do more than he's already doing. The guy, what makes Lamar Jackson so dangerous is the fact that when you run the football, you can't tackle him. Nobody could tackle Lamar Jackson. So now you're just going to put him in the pocket and tell him that he's going to throw the ball and he has to throw the ball at least 20, 25 times a game because he's got to find Julio 8 or 9 of those times. And that doesn't happen when you throw the ball 15 times a game. So you're just going to tell him that he has to somewhat become a pocket passer? That doesn't make any sense for the Baltimore Ravens. And that's their entire offseason. They spent the offseason trying to improve their passing game on a team that is going to get worse because they get better in the passing game. You're going to be able to – why would you take away what you're – I mean, this isn't the Miami Dolphins back in the day running the Wildcat. This is Lamar Jackson. He's a guy that nobody's going to ever be able to figure out until he starts slowing down. And you're going to take away his biggest asset because you want to be a well-rounded offense. Defenses know how to scout passes. They know how to scout running games. They don't know how to scout Lamar Jackson. And by adding Julio Jones, you're just telling defenses, hey, well, they're probably going to throw the ball, and chances are they're going to throw it to that guy because he needs his catches. Doesn't
– 100%. I think that's a big thing too. Like, if Lamar has really turned around his ability to stand in the pocket and deliver those nice, crisp passes, we're wasting our time. I mean, that team should be winning consecutive Super Bowls. I don't care who Patrick Mahomes is. I don't care who Josh Allen is. If Lamar Jackson can figure out how to effectively throw a football at a high level with Julio Jones at his disposal, cancel. It's over. It's over.
Don't get me wrong.
To this point, he can't. He hasn't been able to do that. You know, kind of like you said, what makes Lamar so special, you can try to game plan for him all you want. You can try to, you know, do X, Y, and Z, the coverages and schemes and all the good stuff. When it comes down to the nitty-gritty and you're one-on-one with Lamar Jackson, 9.9 times out of 10, you're not touching him. You're not. He's a human highlight reel with the ball in his hands. And that's what helps make their running attack so great as well. You know, you can't – whenever Lamar's doing his nice little read option with J.K. Dobbins coming up the middle – you can't entirely disregard Lamar Jackson. That frees up, you know, a little bit of space up the middle for a guy like Dobbins and the 14 other running backs that the Ravens have to go and do damage, you know, in the running game. So all of that considered, I just think
it's a bad move.
Call it a bad move because getting Julio Jones, no matter what, especially if you're not giving up a first round pick, isn't a bad move. But it's not just like game-changing thing that a lot of people may make it out to be, at least not in Baltimore.
Exactly. And you're going to take on a $13 million cap for a guy that is going to make your team better, no doubt. But for $13 million, you want Julio Jones. You don't want Julio Jones in a running offense. That's not what you're looking to take on $13 million to do. So for every other team, this makes great sense. Any single – you could go to Dallas. He could go to the Dallas Cowboys, which he's not. And, you know, Shannon Sharp, whatever you feel about Shannon Sharp, you feel about Shannon Sharp. But he's not going to Dallas. But even if he did in a wide receiver room that's already loaded, just like Pittsburgh, so wide receiver room that's already loaded, it still makes more sense for them because they'll take on a $13 million cap for a guy who is immediately going to be a superstar on that team. In Baltimore, Julio Jones is not a superstar. He's just a guy that takes up a lot of attention, and he makes your offense better. Doesn't make your offense great. And for $13 million, doesn't make any sense to me. Another free agent this time potentially was going to come to Pittsburgh. That's been shut down. ESPN predicted that Russell Okung, if I said that correctly, was going to head to Pittsburgh on a one-year, $6.5 million deal. Okung took to Twitter to let everyone know that is not happening because the Steelers can't afford him and that he's only being paid in Bitcoin. Let me tell you this before we get into this. Okung transferred half of his $13 million contract in 2020 with the Carolina Panthers into Bitcoin. At the time, it was like $23,000 or something per coin. That turned into about $6.5 million, turned into about $10.3 million or $10.6 million within 1 year. So the dude knows what he's doing. I'm not going to deny that. But he's not coming to Pittsburgh. Did you want him to come to Pittsburgh? And does he benefit this team enough to sign him for whatever number he's looking for?
Man, if he doesn't want to come to Pittsburgh, he can come to Phoenix and take a look at my Roth IRA and help me out with that. Because, man, it's not looking good right now, man. Granted, I'm not big into crypto like he is, but still, you know, money's money at the end of the day when you're looking at your account. I think I would have welcomed him with open arms. I think he would have been able to start at either left or right tackle immediately over Banner or Okorafor. I think both tackle spots are big question marks for a lot of people on the outside looking in for the Steelers. And, you know, granted, I think we'll find out the answers to those over the course of the next season. But and then adding a guy like that, especially whenever you're just trying to make one big swing at a bat, you know, trying to hit a home run and bring home another Super Bowl for Ben and what might be his last year, you know, I think that can be discussed or debated. But I think you need to kind of find anything that, you know, you can try to do to make your team even somewhat a little bit better and try to compete with, you know, teams like the Ravens, the Browns, the, you know, the Bills, the Chiefs, you know, all that good stuff. Okung would have fit the mold of that. I think $6.5 million wouldn't have broke the bank at all. I think the Steelers have somewhere around 10 as we speak right now. So they still would have had around that $4.5 to $5 million they'd like to carry into the regular season. But I would have been a fan of it. You know, whether or not they would have paid him in Bitcoin would have been a whole other thing. I don't think the Rooneys even know what Bitcoin is.
I was going to say, I don't think our Rooney even has any idea what Bitcoin is, but maybe he does. I mean, the dude's worth 30 some million dollars. I'll tell you this before I start going off about Okung. AMC to the Moon is happening right now. And last Tuesday, my brother and I were on the phone and I convinced myself to sell my AMC stock. So here I am every day staring at it while everyone else becomes rich. And I made $72. So don't listen to me. Okung, if you're listening, I could use your help as well. But I agree. I think that if he comes to Pittsburgh, he's got to play left tackle. I'm 100% on board for Zach Banner. You don't go into the season with Banner even competing against anybody. He is your right tackle. You made the financial commitment. You are here. He is here. That's it. If it doesn't work out, then it doesn't work out, but you got to give him the opportunity. He does come in and start at left tackle over Chooks, and that's fine with me. That obviously makes it better. I mean, he's an 11-year vet. He's in his 30s. I don't know what the upside of it is when you are trying to develop guys like Chooks or Dan Moore Jr. But at the same time, if you're looking at it like this is Ben's last ride and we need to have the perfect team, I understand that. I'm a guy that everyone keeps naming tackles to come to Pittsburgh. Morgan Moses was one. Okung was another one. Everybody seems to believe that the Steelers are going to get an offensive tackle or still need an offensive tackle. But everybody throughout the draft process believed that the Steelers needed an edge rusher, and they did not. I get that maybe it's a weak spot in the offense, but it's not a spot that it could make or break, but it's not the worst spot on your team. I mean, left tackle with Chooks, if he plays well, is a great move. And now you have a guy that you could look at and say, maybe we sign him to an extension and we give him another opportunity. Or if it doesn't, you say, okay, maybe it's time to put Dan Moore in there and give him his opportunity. It's not great options, but it is options. And if you're going to load it up with a 30-some-year-old for a year and say, hey, go do this, then get rid of Chooks, trade him for something, because you want Dan Moore to be that second guy. You don't want Chooks to be there.
No, 100%, and I am on board with you as well whenever it comes to having a guy like Okung on one side and then Zach Banner on the other. I think Zach Banner has indeed earned the right to start either right or left tackle, you know, in that hypothetical scenario, either way you put it. But no, at the end of the day, I think you're right. I think them not getting either a veteran tackle, a starting caliber veteran tackle. I know this line's Joe Hager, starting caliber veteran tackle, and then them not drafting one at 24. Because let's be real, there was a lot of talented guys.
Of tackles.
They could have gone at 24. They could
there
have
was a lot of tackles played. at 50. Was it 50?
100%. They could have traded back if they really wanted to tackle and still got a starting quality guy. That's how that tackle class was. Excuse me, last year. But they did what they did. They took Najee Harris. They kind of reaffirmed, their belief in Okorafor and Banner at least for one more year. And then if things go south, and Dan Moore is there, and then in the case that Okorafor doesn't really pan out, I mean, I know he got some starting experience last year. At least at right tackle, he didn't look very good. But, you know, left and right tackle are worlds differently whenever you're
talking different. And he looked good at the beginning of the season. People seem to, like, overlook that. As the season went on and the entire Steelers offense got worse, so did Chooks. But at the beginning of the season when the Steelers offense was strong, Chooks was playing well. And I think that we have to take that with a grain of salt. I think that every position on this offense has to be looked at and go, okay, what was your first five or six games like? And what was your last five or six games like? Because those were two different Pittsburgh Steelers teams. They were not the same teams, and they weren't running the same plays, and they weren't running the same offenses. So maybe Chooks plays well when Ben's not running RPOs all the time. Maybe Chooks plays well when there's a running game. You don't know, you know? And I said this throughout the draft process, you said the same thing. It comes down to who do you trust out of all of your weak spots? Who do you trust the most? And people don't really like Chooks, but he was pretty much on the top of the list of guys that you could look at and go, if we have to start you, I feel more comfortable starting you than I do Benny Snell Jr. or BJ Finney, or I mean, at the time it was Robert Spillane or Justin Lane and James Pierre. And I get that James Pierre and Justin Lane are probably still going to start, but you know, Chooks was a guy that tackle, like you said, there was plenty of tackles in the draft, and you could have drafted one and you could have went out and just boosted this offensive line, but you didn't. And it made a lot of sense why you didn't. So I don't know. I think that if he is there and he is the starting guy, that I'm fine with it. And I don't think that the Steelers need to go out and spend a bunch of money on any tackle or any offensive lineman at this point. Also, Joe Haig looks okay at OTAs. He doesn't look – I mean, there's no contact, but, you know, he looks like a big dude. He looks like an athletic dude. I know. We know the story.
We'll see about it.
You know, that's – you got to have some faith. I think he's a Wisniewski, though. I think by week five or six, he's gone, and Dan Moore is that second guy. And then I hope at that point BJ Finney is the swing guy. But I'll tell you this. And I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but BJ Finney is not the guy taking team one reps.
Oh, I know. It's not a secret.
I'm just saying, BJ, but the guy that you're thinking of that's taking team one reps is not the guy taking team one reps. Yep.
It's not the other guy.
There's only one more left. There's two letters in his first name, yeah. But I mean, there's two guys with two letters. So who am I talking about? I don't know. See, I'm not giving away any secrets. I'm just saying that right now, as we stand, 3 days into OTAs, 2 days into OTAs, people might
be
a little.
Do you remember last year whenever they put Matt Filer at guard? And they're like, oh, well, this is just the best lineup right now. And bro can't play guard. Like, I don't know what he's doing there. And they're like, oh, like, you know, Kevin Dotson doesn't know the offense, this, this, and that. And I'm like, okay, well, like, Matt Filer really can't play a guard. He needs to go back to tackle. And then they played him a guard. This is giving me those same exact vibes right now.
That's the exact same vibes. The exact same vibes. But again, I mean, Banner's not practicing right now. He's still rehabbing. You know, the rookies are only a week and a half into this. They're still learning the playbook. And I mean, everything's just getting kind of tossed around. But I don't know. Take it as you will for those of you who are worried about those things. Before we head out, from what I'm hearing and from what seems to be the connections tying, the Pittsburgh Steelers are on their way back to Latrobe and St. Vincent College this summer for training camp. I don't really know what there is to talk about, but I do know that that's super exciting for everybody and the fans. The NFL announced that fans could attend training camp. They also fully expect there to be full capacity at NFL stadiums, which is huge. And they said that 30 out of 32 teams have already been approved to have full capacity. The Pittsburgh Steelers, I do believe, are one of them. So that is ginormous. Changes the entire landscape of a Pittsburgh Steelers season. And if this is Ben's last ride, there is no better way to go than with a screaming Heinz Field on your back. So hopefully everybody takes that and smiles a little bit, especially after the news that I just gave 3 minutes ago. Thank you, everybody, for jumping on and joining us at another episode of All Steelers Talk. Find us everywhere you find your podcast, and we will see you next week.
It's a new day, and it's coming at you fast. With Comcast Business, you'll have what you need to take on every twist and turn, like the flexibility to control multiple Wi-Fi networks from anywhere, a cybersecurity solution to help protect all your connected devices, and the power of the nation's largest gig speed network, all supported by a dedicated team available 24/7. Every day in business is a big day. Comcast Business will keep you ready for what's next. Comcast Business, powering possibilities.
We did it again. Verizon was just named America's most reliable network by Root Metrics for the 16th time in a row, proving once again that nobody builds networks like Verizon builds networks. That's why we're building 5G right. That's why there's only one best network, Verizon. Best and most reliable based on Root Metrics reports from second half 2013 to first half 2021 of three operators on all network types combined, not specific to 5G networks.